You're listening to EPN, the e-podcast network.
This is Enterprise Radio and your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, your EPN channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and top executives who have experienced great success, as well as the sharing of their latest creations, products, and or services that can help you build your business, leading to business success. Today we are with PJ Quesada, Vice President of Ramar Foods International, the largest producer of Filipino food in North America. PJ, certainly a privilege to have you with us today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks for having me, Eric. I'm really excited.
Yeah, excited to have you as well. This is very interesting and looking forward to hearing more about Ramar Foods International. So tell us, first of all, Ramar Foods is a multi-generational mid-sized family business that is part of a booming industry, gourmet and ethnic foods. How is your company adapting to the growth and building on what your grandparents founded?
You know, well, my grandparents came here from the Philippines in the 60s. And, you know, with every multi-generational business, I guess you could say that every generation has kind of a different driver on what makes them do what they do when they finally take the reins. When my grandparents came in, they were trying to diversify and make sure they had something for each of their 11 kids to do. That's right, 11 kids. And they're all still around, all on the board of directors, which is a lot of fun. But when my dad, who is the second generation in the business, came on board, he was really a business guy. He actually graduated in accounting from Menlo College here in California, and he just likes getting his hands on businesses and turning them into something that's profitable. The great thing about that is that it lays this awesome groundwork for me and my brother and sister to come in with this passion to reconnect with our culture. So the kind of what drives us these days is reconnecting our culture with our diaspora that's here in this country, and also introducing our awesome food to the masses.
And nothing better than that. Now, in your experience, what are the three most important things business owners need to address when growing from a small business to a mid-sized business?
You know, this is a lesson that we're learning. I think in some ways we're kind of learning the hard way. I'm sure you'll agree, and your listeners will definitely agree, that when you're a small business, you have a lot of advantages. You can pivot really quickly. You can put out product really quickly. You can more or less go with your gut, and you've got a pretty good chance of success, because you can always change course. But then on the other side, there's, you know, the larger businesses where you have incremental growth, you have a lot of markets, intense complexity. As a mid-sized business, we're learning that we're kind of in between. We've got enough weight to throw around to make the same impacts that a larger business does, but we're still developing our more sophisticated systems so that we can really throw our weight around effectively in the ring, so to speak. So I think one of the most important things that people can probably absorb about our experience of transitioning from a small business to a mid-sized business is don't be afraid to spend on metrics. I think we got very comfortable using primarily evaluative metrics in the past few decades. You know, we look at what we did for the year, we see how sales went, and then that more or less guides what we do the next year. We're starting to get into navigational metrics, really investing in studying the market and really understanding the buying cycles that our consumers have so that we can really start to bring some innovative products to the market. I think that's probably the biggest thing that we're really in the middle of learning, is not to be afraid to spend money on a study.
Good point. Now, for the entrepreneurs and marketers listening in, can you share any of your valuable insights about Asian American consumers or the Filipino American buyer?
Sure. You know, in the food industry, especially when you look at the broader, what we call the mainstream market, you know, the American supermarkets, there's a lot of attention on bringing in products that would cater to other ethnic demographics, you know, non-white demographics. And typically that's broken up into two major demographics, Hispanic and Asian. The Hispanic demographic is a great demographic. It's gigantic in this country. And I think what a lot of marketers have learned from working with the Hispanic demographic is that you more or less can take a similar approach when you're approaching different parts of that market, because the majority of that market comes from pretty much, you know, South America or Central America. Common language, common values, common family systems in that regard. So it makes it more or less predictable. In the Asian community, however, I think marketers may have been painting that community with too broad of a brush. Because when you have populations coming from Japan and China and the Philippines, for example, all three of them have vastly different shopping habits and vastly different family value systems that are based on things that might, you know, seem foreign to us. So you know, we have this increase in education in the general market where people are starting to say, hey, I don't just want Asian food. I want a specific type of Asian food, because they know what they're going to get from one place to another is so vastly different. I think when marketers start to segment the Asian American consumers based on their country of descent or their heritage, they can start to really capitalize on the opportunity, because, you know, Asian Americans do typically have a higher than average education, higher than average income. They like to spend on luxury items as well as you know, regular run of the mill consumer packaged goods. So it's really an impressive market, and I think it runs under people's radars most of the time because we look at it too generally.
Another bit of great information today. We are joined by PJ Quezada, Vice President of Ramar Foods International, the largest producer of Filipino food in North America, here on Enterprise Radio, a part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Advanced Asian cuisine, including Filipino food, is projected to be the largest 2015 food trend by industry experts in the Sterling Rice Group annual report. How are you working to accommodate the growing demand from a mass audience and large national retailers for Filipino food?
Yeah, there's a couple of approaches we're taking there. You know, myself and my two siblings, we're extremely passionate about the culture that we come from, and of course the food that we get to eat, because that's really the part of it that we've latched onto the most. I love how Sterling Rice Group called it advanced Asian, because that really is kind of what we're looking at. You know, as I said earlier, people tend to paint the Asian American community with a pretty broad brush. When you get into the advanced understanding of all of these different communities, you find that you're really looking at this great diversity that has so many new things to offer. And that feeds into the diverse tastes of the millennial consumers. And, of course, you know, those are the trendsetters. In the food business, if you can get the millennials to fall in love with your product, your philosophy, your brand, you pretty much are able to ensure your business for the next, you know, 10 to 20 years, provided you don't screw up something big, of course. On that note, that understanding is something that has been fostered over many, many years by ourselves and also by a lot of like-minded companies trying to educate the consumers as to what the differences are between the different Asian cuisines. So what you get now is people are developing a taste for these kind of destinations. So they kind of know the philosophy of Japanese food and what you can get out of it. And they know the philosophy and customs of Chinese food and what they can get out of it. What's new and exciting is Filipino food. And I think what's driving that is this large influx of immigrants that came in the 60s and 70s and 80s. They have burgeoned this entire new generation of Filipino Americans that, you know, their parents came here speaking fluent English. So most of these kids don't speak the native language, but they still have these tastes. So they're bringing these tastes that they grew up with, and they're trying to apply it to what is available to them. And just that alone, and, you know, just to think about, you know, when you have a meal with a college friend and that college friend is from another culture, you actually remember very deeply what that meal was and how interesting it was. People are very hungry for that kind of experience, and they're starting to look for things that are new and unique, even if they might have been available to them in one way or another for, you know, several decades, like Filipino cuisine. Now that there is a definitive pocket of people that understand it, there is now actual demand for Filipino cuisine, and we're seeing that explode in the restaurant scene. I mean, just, you know, New York, Chicago, Miami, Austin, San Francisco, San Diego, Seattle, all major cities that are opening up new restaurants that are focusing on Filipino flavors. So on our end, we get to not only participate in this effort of educating the public, but we're also educating the retail sector as to what to expect from this market, what their demands are going to be, what their other shopping habits are like, so that they can benefit from this influx of second-generation Filipino-Americans as they exit their parents' shopping habits in Asian supermarkets and join the mass-market American shopping habits.
As we transition into the curiosities, when did you start working for your family's company, and what was your first job?
You know, I think I started working before I could remember, but I do remember working. We do have a line of tropical ice cream, and we used to have a small facility in Oakland on Telegraph Avenue. I think I was 5 years old when I was working in that factory. I think I was paid 1 cent for every sticker I put on an ice cream lid. So I had a lot of fun when I was 5 years old. Now I wasn't old enough to realize that the pay was no good, but I think my dad was looking to teach me a lesson and also have some efficient labor, which, you know, I can't blame him for it.
Does your family have any holiday traditions? As everyone is involved in the family business, how do you take time to enjoy the holidays together in that regard?
Now, the holidays are always great for us. Just like with most other cultures, family is always at the center of things, and family always gathers around food. So we have family that's very busy. We have family that's retired. We have family that travels. When we cook Filipino food, that is the best way to bribe them all to get into the same place, because we're all busy, and we're all sometimes stressed with just, you know, how this modern life can be. It's a way for us to reconnect with our roots. And, like I said, it's really not different than most other countries. I think we start to reflect on what's really important around this time of year. And when you're gathering with family, whether you love them or not, you definitely need to have food. So I would say that without family and food, might as well not have a holiday.
Yeah, well, that is so true. Bingo on that. Now, lastly, if anyone listening in has never tried Filipino food before, what do you recommend that they try first?
I've actually got an answer and a half for you. I think the easy answer there is to try adobo, because adobo is the unofficial national dish of the Philippines. This is it's usually pork or chicken braised in vinegar with soy sauce. And that's delicious. There's a million ways to make it, and everybody's going to claim that theirs is the best. But there's another dish that I would recommend people to try, and it's called sinigang, and that's spelled S-I-N-I-G-A-N-G. And it is a sour broth soup, usually soured with tamarind or some kind of a citrus. It is one of the most unique and most delicious dishes, and it has remained relatively unchanged in the Philippines for the last several hundred years, even through generations of foreign influence and trade. This dish has pretty much come out unscathed, and I think is a really true picture of the depth and complexity that Filipino cuisine can really offer.
Yes, and it's about supper time as well, so we're all getting hungry listening to all this great information and suggestions. How about telling our listeners on the way out where they can get more information about Ramar Foods International online?
Well, online you can find out about our products at ramarfoods.com. That's ramarfoods.com. And you can also hit us up on our Facebook page, which is, again, it's just search Ramar Foods on Facebook, or also Twitter. We're happy to carry on the conversation.
Well, PJ, it certainly has been great to have had you today, and thanks so much for joining us here on Enterprise Radio.
Thank you, Eric. It was a pleasure.
You bet. We've been speaking with PJ Quezada, Vice President of Ramar Foods International, the largest producer of Filipino food in North America. And once again, the website of reference is ramarfoods.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Pick up our iPhone or Android mobile app for your mobile listening convenience. And once again, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio here on EPN. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.